Hey guys, how's it going? I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Yeah, I didn't watch the Jon Stewart thing. I'm just talking with Fitz in the chat room here. I really don't like Rand Paul. Even when I'm watching his speech and I'm totally agreeing with him and he's citing, you know, anecdotes of founding fathers, court cases and all this stuff, he just sounds so damn whiny and self-regarding. Is that the right word I'm looking for? Self-something. Even the thing about, oh yeah, I bet you'd like for there to be a terrorist attack so you could blame it on me. Man. Be more like your dad, please. In fact, I tweeted out, you can find on my Twitter feed, man, you'd have to page down a bit there, I guess, but you can just find it at Reason Magazine. Jesse Walker posted a speech that Ron Paul gave at the 15th anniversary of Reason Magazine in 1983. It was the 10th anniversary. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, it must have been the 10th anniversary, right? It's such a great speech, man. It's cool just watching Ron Paul be Ron Paul back in 1983 when he was young. And he had all kinds of laugh lines in there and stuff. You know, it was really good, man. It was really good. I would recommend to Rand Paul that he go put Ron Paul in his YouTube search function there. Hey, look, I could stand to do the same thing. I learned this lesson very early on in radio that, you know, you should be more like Ron Paul. You should be more like Harry Brown. You should be a very nice and genuine and decent and classy guy. But I'm just not. I'm the scum of the earth. But that's all right. I'm not running for president. I'm not a senator. The last thing anybody wants to hear from a senator is whining. Are you whining? Here he's defeating the Patriot Act. He's whining about the Patriot Act. What would his father do? Would his father get up there and whine about the Patriot Act? You know what? Put it in the YouTube. Ron Paul, Patriot Act. Search. See if you can find him whining about it. It's the that character flaw, man, is Rand Paul's undoing. I'll tell you what, dude. He just is kind of a whiny douchebag sort of a dude. Even on his best day. And you know what? Yesterday was heroic. I should have started with that. What Rand Paul did yesterday was heroic. He killed three of the worst parts of the Patriot Act. Most especially the one that they had been secretly, quote-unquote, reinterpreting, hardy har har, to mean that they can collect all our telephone records. And Marcy Wheeler's going to be on to give us, you know, actual education and all this here in a little while. But this is heroic. And, you know, Wyden... And what was the other guy, Wyden's friend? Starts with a U or something? Udall? Was it Udall? Those guys were never going to do this. Nobody was ever going to kill the Patriot Act, or, you know, in any sense at all. They were never going to let this sunset. It took a real fight, and Rand Paul was the only one to do it. Only one who ever would have done it. And that's huge. Now, they're going to re-legalize quite a bit of this with the Freedom Act here in a couple of days, I think. We'll see what all happens with that. But for what he did, it was more than a stunt. It was a real-ass thing. A huge thing. A very important thing. And I disagree with Justin Raimondo that this is his redemption. This is a hopeful sign. That's what this is. I sent a tweet to his staff. I don't imagine he looks at his own Twitter mentions, you know. But I'm just... Look, I'm sorry. I'm obsessed with Rand Paul, okay? Ever since 2009, the very first thing I ever learned about him was when I interviewed him. I didn't know anything about him when I interviewed him. And I was just so damn disappointed that, oh, man, I see how you are. And he's been pissing me off and disappointing me ever since then, too. The son of the greatest parliamentarian in the history of all of humanity. And he's such a... damn low down disappointment so much of the time. Even when he does stuff right, it still just kind of makes me go, oh no, what's he gonna do next though? You know, I wish I could count on him. He's still better than most of them on, or better than all of them on most things, is what I mean to say. But, man, he's bad on war with Iraq. Well, the western part of what used to be Iraq, Eastern Islamic State. He's half obstructionist, half helpful on the Iran nuclear deal. Horrible on Israel-Palestine. Well, and just Israel in general. Making them basically honorary members of NATO, in essence. But I sent a tweet to the staff this morning. I said, you notice when he panders on these things, Iran, the Islamic State, Israel, doesn't get him anywhere with anyone. Doesn't appease the war hawks who absolutely hate his guts. I'll never trust him in a million years. And it pisses off everybody who ought to love him just from the start because of who he is and how good he must be for being the son of the guy who's great on everything. Almost. And so, you know, I think maybe he's learning the lesson, too. They're like, holy crap, here I am up against every idiot who wants to try to run in these Republican primaries. And there's, what, like 17 of them so far or something? It's completely out of control, this Republican primary. They're going to have to split up the debates and this kind of thing. And each and every one of them, nothing but clones. Perfect parroting puppets of each other on every single issue. Like, oh, crap, give me a little bit of a pretend dispute about Common Core or some... I mean, I know it's important. It's important if you're silly enough to, for some reason, put your kids in government school, but that might not be the right word for it. But, you know, there's basically no difference between any of these guys, and they all are just lining up to take shots at Rand Paul and call him the Democrat. So he's only got one choice, which is to fight them. Which is to say, I'm the conservative, and you guys are all the sons of Leon Trotsky. You guys are basically a bunch of big government liberal Democrats. Hard Wilsonian, well, if he can pronounce it. Hard Wilsonianism. Isn't that what Max Boot calls it? Isn't that this policy to remake the world? Well, what's so conservative about world revolution? What's so conservative about empire? What's so conservative about the U.S. state guaranteeing the sovereignty of every other state in the world? Hey, this is hardly an exaggeration. Look at this. This is from today in the Washington Post. Map. The U.S. is bound by treaties to defend a quarter of humanity. And that's only because China and India are so big that it kind of dwarfs this and that. And they don't count, you know, Rand Paul's spoken only treaty with Israel here. But anyway, that's all he's got to do is just say, look, I'm the true conservative, and you guys are a bunch of big government liberal Democrats, and the empire is nothing but a big government liberal Democrat program. Just ask Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and they'll tell you. That's his only chance, man. All regular Joes, all libertarians, all real conservatives, and liberals with their priorities straight want to join the Rand Paul coalition to end the empire. Let's do this thing. That's all he's got to do is say that over and over and over again for the next year and a half. And think about it. Seriously, the worst he's up against, I mean, the most intelligent, I guess, thoughtful, well-spoken foreign policy opponent he has on that stage is Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham, who's for war for Al-Qaeda in Yemen and in Syria and in Libya, and whose war in Iraq inadvertently gave them all of Western and Northwestern Iraq to be jihadistan, the war his father warned against at the time, that he opposed at the time too, Rand did. I don't know if he can prove that, but everybody knows he did, because he's not that stupid, right? Hey, Al Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. It's the Scott Horton Show. I'm on the Liberty Radio Network. Live here from noon to tune. Noon to tune? I mean, I guess our cartoon's on all day. Noon to 2 Eastern Time. And then you can find all the archives of the whole show and the interviews at scotthorton.org. And when I'm not on the microphone, I'm angrily tweeting all day long at twitter.com/ScottHortonShow. Hey, Chuck D follows me. I must be all right. Or, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's just looking for good links to news stories about cops killing people. I provide lots of those. I'm like a magnet for those links, man. They just come to me all day long. More than I could ever cover on this show. They just come flowing in. More names than I could ever memorize, you know? It's two or three people a day. Oh, you know what? As long as I'm off on a little tangent about cop killings, let me try to keep this to a tangent here and tell you that there's this very important work done at the Washington Post, of all places. When they make the decision, they can devote significant resources to a story. This one is fatal police shootings in 2015 approaching 400 nationwide. So, here we are at the halfway point. And anyway, yeah, you'll learn a lot in here. You know, and when they say, notice, whenever they say, well, this many people actually did have a weapon, it just goes without saying that they were all guilty of threatening to use it on the cop. But do you believe that? You know, one of the ones over the weekend was a guy, a black guy, with a BB gun, an air rifle, and he had it on his shoulder, like up against his shoulder. And he had earbuds in his ears, was listening to music. And the cop said drop it. He didn't. The cop shot him over and over again in the back. And then they took his earbuds out of his ears, and get this, they obstructed justice. Or, I don't know what you call it. Framed the evidence up. Took his earbuds out, put them in his pocket. But then the pictures came out from the civilian bystanders. The pictures came out. He had his earbuds in. That's why he didn't hear the command to drop it. Drop it. But it was just a BB gun. I mean, man, there are... Don't we all know this? Don't you already know this? I'm only reminding you of a thing that you know. That there are serious, hardened criminals who, if a cop tells them to drop the gun, they drop the gun. They're not going to shoot a cop, man. People who are serious-ass murderers will not shoot a cop. Now, I'm not saying that they shouldn't take precautions when they're dealing with actual murderers, but they act like the general public is just waiting for a chance to get the drop on them and blow their head off. But why is that realistic at all? That's crazy. People who are just regular people, you know? Well, he had a gun in his hand. I said, drop it. And he looked at me like, what? And so I blew his head off. So I put four through his heart. Oh, none of them are that good of a shot. I mean, doesn't anyone mention in training? Now, if you come upon an innocent citizen and you scream at him like some Nazi drill sergeant, drop it! He might not understand you. He might be confused for a minute as to why you're... He might even be look behind him to think you're talking to somebody else. So, give him a second before you kill him. Wait and see if maybe they're actually going to point the thing at you and try to kill you with it. For God's sake, we're supposed to just assume that anyone who had a weapon that the cops killed, well, he was armed. Yeah, well, so? He's a human being. He's got a right to be armed. And in America, that right is protected by the very same charter what created the government, has amendments to it, says you can't, government. So anyway, you know what? But here's my crazy thing. I presume them all innocent. I say the burden of proof is on the state to prove that they didn't frame the, each one of these corpses with a drop gun. We all know that's how they do it. That's called business. When you work for government, that's just how you do it. So, I presume they were all innocent, even the armed ones. So the cops are just on a hardcore mass murder spree. You may have heard the statistic. The cops in America killed more people in March of 2015 than the English cops killed in the entire 20th century. I know the populations are different, but yeah. Jeez, it's almost like the government isn't actually our security force at all, but maybe they have other agendas. Puzzling, huh? Wonder. Okay. Again, Marcy Wheeler. She's coming up to talk about the Patriot Act. Did I say Phil Weiss is going to be on the show, too? Yeah, dude. Phil Weiss is going to be on the show, too. We're going to talk Israel and Palestine with him. Join at the chat room. Follow me on Twitter. Retweet me for crying out loud. And, all right. You know, I saw Red State, Eric Erickson, tweeted out a thing, and I went and looked at it. And you know what it said? It said that conservatives should not believe the government when they come up with a bunch of scaremongering crap about what's going to happen to us without the Patriot Act. He said, this is the same government that cried their eyes out when Ted Cruz shut down the government for a week or whatever, you know, stunt. And what kind of catastrophe was that in real life? They're the government. They're the Democrats. Why should anyone believe them, particularly conservatives? Right, you shouldn't. They're your enemy. Right. They're your enemy. And I thought, wow, hey, all right. Now, just wait till Jeb comes. It's going to be a whole different story going on around there. But isn't that cool how it only takes 6 years of Democrats being in power to make conservatives distrust the state a little bit? And you know there's some serious cognitive dissonance there. Yeah, but the professionals in the national security state that I worship, even if they're controlled by Democrats, mightn't their honor and valor and virtue and demigod status among us mere mortals guarantee that they would only say true things and do necessary things? But I just can't get over my hatred of Barack Obama. He's just so damn liberal. Did you hear that he was a community organizer? So there you go. Good, good. Hatred of the president has finally overcome worship of the national security state over at Red State for a minute. So, give him a hand, everybody. That's pretty good. All right, now I got to take a break again already. But then coming up, Marcy Wheeler, then more me talking, and then Phil Weiss. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
Hey, how's it going, y'all? Welcome back. I got Marcy on the line. Marcy Wheeler, that is. Empty Wheel, they call her on the internet. EmptyWheel.net. And, man, is she good at understanding all these surveillance laws and news stories and bits and pieces and context and all these things that come out, probably better than anybody that I could think of. And that includes Snowden and Bamford and Greenwald. She's the best of the best. Welcome back to the show. How are you, Marcy?
Well, that's awfully high praise. Thanks. And thanks for having me back.
Very happy to have you here. You deserve it, of course. Now, hey, great victory. What am I missing? Right, Rand Paul, he killed three very bad parts of the Patriot Act last night. Am I right?
The Patriot Act, three parts of the Patriot Act, actually one isn't part of the Patriot Act, but it doesn't really matter. Three counterterrorism. See, now I'm picking up the bad reporting. Three things lapsed last night. They're likely, and he said, they're likely to be reauthorized in due course, in quick turnover. Mitch McConnell is busy trying to weaken the USA Freedom Act before he passes it and sends it back to the House. So we'll see how long it lasts. But today, for the first day since 2006, your phone company is not sending your phone records to the NSA.
At least as far as we know.
Under that program.
Right.
They are. The NSA still is collecting your any calls you have internationally, because they get that out overseas, and they don't even have any rules about how they access that, so, or very few rules.
Gotcha. Now, well, as far as loopholes, is that pretty much it? Just the overseas calls, but there's not space in, I think you said this last time on the show, there's nothing in the FISA Amendments Act or the Executive Order 12333 that they could use to replace this particular thing of just Americans' domestic calls to each other, those records.
Well,
is that correct?
You know, they could try and use the Pen Register Act. I suspect that if they did, the telecoms would go, or Verizon at least. AT&T, of course, doesn't care. But Verizon would care, and I think they'd fight that. And it's not clear that they can get with Pen Registers everything they want to get in any case. But you know, they may try, but with the Second Circuit decision, I think they have a hard time repurposing something like that without the telecom at least being able to make a pretty big stink. Mm.
And then, but so the overall secrecy here basically is not secrecy enough to be cover if they decided to just keep going anyway. I mean, it took Snowden to tell us the truth of what was going on, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think with the lapse, the ACLU won't have standing to go back to the Second Circuit right away until something's reauthorized. But if, for example, one of the things Mitch McConnell is trying to do today is extend the transition period from 6 months under USA Freedom Act to a year, and if he did that, I wouldn't be surprised if the ACLU went to the Second Circuit and said, look, you know, you said it was illegal, and yet they keep extending it, and that's not right.
Is there any plausible reason why it should have to take that long?
Probably not. It only took – remember, Yahoo, when they were setting up Prism at Yahoo, sued. And even with them suing, it only took 6 months for them to start turning over records under the Protect America Act. Now – arguably, this is more complex because you need to kind of go back and forth between the provider and the NSA. But look, I mean, they had a very similar program in place at the FBI from 2002 until 2006. So I don't see why it should take a year to recreate what the FBI, which is the most tech-backwards, certainly then, was the most tech-backwards agency in government, mm-hmm. Ain't going to happen.
So what all does the USA Freedom Act do? I mean, I imagine it's a couple of hundred pages or something, right?
Yeah, it's just over 100. And a big chunk of that is implementation of a treaty. So basically makes it easier to go after pirates. We're going to, you know, policemen of the world, we're going to go after pirates. The short version is the government will no longer hold phone records. There is a weak restriction on how much data the government can get under U.S. under Section 215, under pen register, under national security letters. I think they're weak. The reformers are really excited about it. There is weak. There are weak efforts to make the FISA court less dysfunctional. Mitch McConnell is also trying to reverse those today. And that's kind of, oh, and then there are stupid things like they're going to extend terrorism, material support for terrorism sentences. So lots of goodies thrown in for the intelligence community.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think you even have a piece here on EmptyWheel.net. Well, at least according to the title, if I understand it right, that they're going to expand the definition of what's a terrorist, too.
That's something that that Richard Burr, who's the Intelligence Committee chair, wanted to do. That's not in anything that would go before the Senate today. But it was pretty alarming because, I kind of think Burr reflects the id of the intelligence community. It's, you know, he's kind of giving voice to what they think they should have. And they think they should be able to define anybody who makes a threat against the government, I mean, effectively, but broadly interpreted, and this is not outside the realm of what the FBI has done in the past against, you know, the people they entrap for terrorism. But broadly speaking, they tried, Burr, you know, put it in his bill, to define somebody who makes a threat and has a gun as a terrorist, which has all sorts of horrible ramifications if it ever were to pass. Now, it didn't, but still.
Yeah. Well, I guess a handgun is a weapon of mass destruction, too, if that's what they want to call it, right? And they've tried to do that before
this basically puts a gun on the same level as weapons of mass destruction as one of those crimes that would get you called a terrorist and treated as a terrorist and called a terrorist before a jury. Of course, the weapons of mass destruction thing, they apply it to things like pipe bombs as well. So it's, you know, they've lowered the bar for what makes a terrorist so low. It's really ridiculous.
Well, now, when we're talking about threats in this case, how specific does it have to be? Because the Brandenburg decision is the latest most specific and overriding Supreme Court decision on free speech, and they protect everything but let's get them in an immediate context, right?
So the way they do, I mean, and again, this is not part of USA Freedom Act. It's not before the Senate today. It's just something that...
Yeah, sorry, I took us off on this tangent because it's just interesting to me. But
well, no, I think it's really important, and I think people should be really alarmed by it because... Basically, there are crimes of violence, and they include things that are obvious, like rape or murder or attempted murder, but they also include just the threat of violence and also drugs. And if you carry out a crime of violence while possessing a gun, and you do it in a way that's considered anti-government, then they can label you a terrorist under Richard Burr's bill, which isn't going to become law, but is nevertheless horrifying because that's the way the intelligence community thinks.
Right. Well, and it's, you know, quite possibly coming down the pike one way or the other anyway. If, you know, obviously they've thought of it already.
That's one of the reasons I raise it. It's like if they are, you know, they're continuing to try and lower the bar for terrorism to things that would include, you know, conservative activists who happen to train with guns, that could include looters who, you know, I'm not defending looting, but looting is different from terrorism. But I could see them doing that. Something people should be aware of.
Yeah. And when they're conflating a pipe bomb with an H-bomb, that goes to show how much they value the meaning of words when it comes to getting what they want, too. We'll be right back. It's Empty Wheel, EmptyWheel.net. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, you guys. Welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Yesterday was Rand Paul's best day so far. Maybe I don't need to include so far. I don't know. He killed the Patriot Act, at least for a few days. Well, he didn't kill the whole thing. He killed a couple important parts of it. But now, as we're discussing here on the phone with Marcy Wheeler from EmptyWheel.net, they're going to turn right around and pass the USA Freedom Act anyway. I think I read Tuesday, tomorrow would be the day for that. But I guess also read that Rand was going to try to add some amendments to that to, try to soften the blow somewhat. Do you know much about that, Marcy?
Well, he has some good amendments, but thus far it appears that Mitch McConnell is only going to let his own amendments go through. So, ultimately what has happened, and there's been some horrible reporting on this, Mitch McConnell is the majority leader. We all know that. And Mitch McConnell made decisions going back to 2 weeks and, frankly, long before to try and create an atmosphere of urgency so that he could make the reform bill, the USA Freedom Act, which I think is weak but is better than nothing. So he wanted to create this sense of urgency. And Paul, meanwhile, wanted to kill the bill, to kill the Patriot Act. And Mitch McConnell, that served McConnell's purposes until, and frankly, there have been many times, like after Paul finished this 11-hour filibuster, McConnell actually had a tiny window where he could have invoked cloture on the bill and chose not to do that. When a week ago, Paul refused to pass a five-day, it wasn't just Paul, it was also Ron Wyden and Martin Heinrich, when he prevented those short-term bills from going through, McConnell could have immediately called the Senate back, say, last Wednesday, and they could have had the USA Freedom Act passed and in place by last night. McConnell didn't chose not to do that. So, in point of fact, McConnell let Rand Paul lapse the Patriot Act. I think he would have preferred a short-term reauthorization, but it serves McConnell's purposes to create the sense of urgency. Oh, my gosh, we don't have a phone dragnet today. Mm-hmm. The terrorists are going to kill us. What Paul did is give some more leverage in the House. So, in other words, I think if Paul hadn't done what he would have done, McConnell had bigger asks than what he put forward today. And I think Paul prevented that from happening because he took McConnell's ability to create an entirely false sense of urgency out of McConnell's hands. McConnell gambled and lost, basically.
Mm-hmm. I got it.
But ultimately, I mean, there are a lot of reformers who are saying, oh, it's Rand Paul's fault that this bill will become worse because of these amendments, and that's wrong. That just ignores what happened last night. What happened last night is McConnell said, can we just pass a short-term extension for the roving wiretap and lone wolf provision, and Paul prevented that from going forward. Mm-hmm. But then McConnell, after USA Freedom Act got cloture, McConnell did not and could have said, let's vote on USA Freedom Act right away. McConnell did not do that. So McConnell was the one who made that choice, and he did so because he wants to get these amendments through.
Mm. All right, but now, so on whether the USA Freedom is better than nothing, and I know you've written a lot against it, and you've changed the name of it a few times from Freedom to some other FX Redux, some kind of thing I can't keep up with. But the thing is, now we've got nothing, right? So now that we're in the eye of the storm here, in between the Patriot Act and the Freedom Act, maybe we could just kill the Freedom Act somehow. And, with tons of public pressure. And then that way we would have nothing, and that would be better than the USA Freedom Act, right?
Right. And I think the worst that will happen is that Paul will have prevented McConnell from pushing through amendments that are worse than they could be. So in other words, and this is why it infuriates me, the people who really want USA Freedom Act are yelling at Rand Paul today. I'm like, no, you know, you don't understand what McConnell had in plan. And Paul prevented that from happening because now we have more leverage than we otherwise would have. So I frankly think McConnell is probably been on the phone all day with John Boehner to figure out exactly what John Boehner thinks can go back through the House. Because remember, this now has to go back through the House.
Mm-hmm.
And it will lose votes in the House because people will be perceived as authorizing Section 215 anew when it doesn't exist right now. So, you know, and I think Boehner, who has never been very good at counting votes, is probably trying his darndest to count votes, asking for Nancy Pelosi's help, which is what he always does, to figure out exactly how many of the amendments that McConnell wants to push through actually will go through.
Yeah. Well, so that really opens up an avenue for Americans and their pressure in a couple of ways there, in that it's the House and that they have to go back all over again, and that now, as you say, it's harder to kind of repass the thing than it is to stop it from sunsetting. And so since they were able to let it sunset in the Senate, that kind of makes it harder in the House for them to kind of go back and redo the thing that's now been undone. So, you know, I'm not always one for, I don't believe much, I guess, in public pressure and calling your congressman and that kind of thing. But then again, there are examples where it really does make the difference, where they get the idea that, gee, maybe the wind shifted and I better figure out what my position is going into my next election coming up here. You know, we got to try to appeal to them the only way that works, which is their own self-interest.
Right. And so the place where there is leverage in the Senate. People should call their senator and say, vote against all of Mitch McConnell's amendments. They all water down the already watered down USA Freedom Act. But the other thing is there is, you know, if there were 88 people who voted against the USA Freedom Act the first time, 60 of whom signed a letter from John Lewis and Justin Amash saying this needs to get better, that number could grow. And the question is, could it grow to 218? Could it grow, you know, could it grow to 250, which is where it would need to be to actually improve USA Freedom Act? And I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. As it stands right now, because I'm getting mixed signals. I was trying to Google around and figure it out, but I couldn't figure out whether the ACLU supports the USA Freedom Act at this point or not.
They're neutral on the bill. They are not opposing it, but they are also not endorsing it, which they did back in November.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is the one that started out as a real reform, and then it got all this stuff added to it, right? Now we're talking about adding even more.
Right. It started off as a real reform, and then the intelligence community suckered people into adopting the intelligence community definition of bulk collection and then defining the anti-bulk collection around that, which I don't think is that effective. And then on the second go-around, they threw in a bunch of garbage for the – not garbage, but a lot of things that the intelligence community was asking for. So,
yeah. All right. Now, so this is sort of to rewind things for just a minute, but – if we could go back to, you know, the Snowden Hall here, what do you think is the most important thing, you know, that came out of this? Is it just that they're collecting the phone records, the metadata? I mean, I'm not saying that's nothing. Obviously, it's equals a lot of information about people's lives and all that kind of thing. But, you know, what is it that you think, at least, you know, ought to be the average Joe's main takeaway from what has been revealed here?
From Snowden, look, I mean, the most important revelations from Snowden were that the government is watering down encryption, that the government had broken into Google overseas. We kind of already knew, I already knew about backdoor searches, but because Snowden confirmed it, people also believe in it now.
Mm-hmm.
I also think he revealed how much more data they're collecting on Americans overseas. I mean, this is just an American viewpoint. I think there are other really troubling aspects that he revealed. And all of those things you know, none of those things is the phone dragnet. The phone dragnet is really troublesome, but it's also just one part of the dragnet the NSA has, and it, in current form or in the form it existed in yesterday, wasn't particularly effective for the NSA. So, you know, Shane Harris had an article about a week ago where he quoted somebody saying that USA Freedom Act is a nothing burner because they already needed to fix the program. This gives them a way to fix the program. It gives them legal authorization they needed to get the telecoms to do what they want to do. And I think that's about right. I mean, I think that the NSA used this capitulation on Section 215 to A, improve a program that wasn't working very well, and B, throw the reformers off. And we'll see whether it works or not, or we'll see whether the transpartisan coalition, you know, libertarians and progressives that you need to have working well together to actually fight surveillance, we'll see whether that gets stronger because of this whole silly USA Freedom Act process. Mm. But that's where we're at.
But now,
that,
so then,
that coalition needs to work better together if we're going to make progress on all the other problems with NSA spying.
Right. And all those other problems are still there, right? Like, this is the only reform we've gotten really at all so far. And all the rest of their weaponization of all technology on Earth against the people of the planet, that's all still rolling right on, right?
Absolutely.
Man. All right. Well, it's a little bit of progress. For a couple of days.
Yep.
I guess we'll see.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks very much for your time and all your great explaining, Marcy. Appreciate it.
All right. Great to be on. Good to talk to you. Bye-bye.
All right, y'all. That's the great Marcy Wheeler. She is at emptywheel.net. Emptywheel.net. And emptywheel is also her handle on Twitter, too. You could follow her. We'll be right back. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. If this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, y'all. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
What language is that?
Welcome back. That's what I was trying to say. Real fast here now. Kerry, Zarif, failed to make breakthrough in nuclear talks.
Oh, that's bad news.
Kerry breaks femur in bicycle crash. Returns to U.S.
I wonder why Jesus hates the nuclear deal so much.
God dang it.
That might be a deal killer, guys. To think anything in this world is hanging on John Kerry's skills.
What a topsy-turvy life we live, huh?
I don't know, man. Who are they going to bring in? Some auxiliary diplomat who hopefully is already drinking buddies with Zarif. Zarif drink, I guess not. Smoking buddies, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, by the way, just in case you forgot, or in case it's the first time you heard the show in a while, Netanyahu told his cabinet, our biggest fear is that Iran will honor the nuclear deal. That's in Haaretz. He told the war cabinet, yeah, man, what might happen is what's most likely to happen. The reason we must stop the Iran nuclear deal is because if it's made, then Iran will abide by it. We won't catch them cheating because they won't cheat. And then after 15 years of acting like a normal country in a normal time, without sanctions, without a nuclear weapons program,
then they'll be accepted as just another country in the world. Because, you know, they'll be one. And so that's intolerable. Doesn't say why, though. Doesn't say why. It's just supposed to go without saying. An end to any perceived threat from Iran will be detrimental. Guess that leaves the obvious reasons. You know, the health of the state. All right, now, check it out. The DIA report. Here's the thing I wanted to say about the DIA report, and I keep forgetting to say about the DIA report. You know how I first heard about the DIA report? Fox News. Fox News, retired model lady, was saying, hey, guess what, everybody? There's a DIA report found by our heroes and good friends, Larry Klayman and the guys over at Judicial Watch. And it says it predicted the rise of the Islamic State. Implication clear. Loser Democrat president failed to stop it, even though he had all the prior warning in the world, like the Oklahoma City bombing or something. But you know what? I never saw them mention it again. And you know why? It's because if you read it, it doesn't say that pulling the troops out of Iraq is leading to the rise of the Islamic State, as Brad Hoff pointed out at Levant Report, as David Misner has written in his new piece at Jacobin. It says Western support, Western and Allied support for the rebels in Syria is what is leading to the rise of the Islamic State. So Fox News had a great headline until somebody there actually read the damn thing and said, uh-oh, it was Fox News that led to the rise of the Islamic State. It was all of Fox's favorite hawks who agreed with Obama, who criticized him only for not doing enough to destroy the Ba'athist regime in Damascus and replace it with a bunch of suicide bomber lunatics. Oh, no, the moderates of the Islamic State that sell of the Free Syrian Army, that sell American hostages to the Islamic State, that sell American missiles to the Islamic State, that fight side by side with the Islamic State and al-Nusra, too. That is basically just acts as the arms brokers between America and its enemies. And these mythical moderates, they exist, but they're only barely, and they're not moderate. They behead their prisoners, too. They do suicide attacks against women and children, too. They're all a bunch of bin Ladenites. Always have been since 2011. Been covering it on the show the whole time. And the only thing that's notable about the DIA report is, blam, look, even at the Pentagon, they were saying on August the what, 11th or something, 2012, the same thing we were saying on this show that day, too. The same thing. Holy crap. Obama is creating the Islamo-fascist caliphate that only ever existed in Osama bin Laden's attic where he was hiding from his wife. The Islamo-fascist caliphate that never existed except, you know, I guess if you want to count Mubarak's regime in Egypt. the Islamo-fascist caliphate that never existed but in Zawahiri's dream, and then he got exploded to death in 2006. So much for that. Obama's really doing it. He's creating the damn thing. And I'm not just patting myself on the back and whatever. Obviously, those of you who've been listening to the show since back then, you know that that's right. You saw this coming like a slow motion train wreck, probably without my help, and that's why you like the show, is because you already know stuff like this and that kind of thing. But anyway, you know it's right, and the point being is that is how obvious it was. And then dig, man, it was almost a full year before the Islamic State split off from al-Nusra. And then it was another year before they actually declared the caliphate and rode to Mosul. Man. That is really something else. I gotta tell you what. 4,000 killed in Iraq in May. These are 2007 type surge working numbers here. Bodies stacked like cordwood. 4,000 killed a month. And then here at Patrick Lang's blog, he's a former, I think, DIA and CIA guy like Giraldi. Sic Semper Tyrannis is his blog. Thus, always to tyrants. And he's actually just referring us to an article at the Business Insider, but it's about how, you know what? And this was so obvious. Called this on the show a couple weeks ago when as soon as it came up. They just barely were able to take Tikrit, and that was with a lot of help from the Iranians, and then at the end, with the help of American air power, to take Tikrit. At the same time, they lost Baiji again. And then they lost Ramadi. They had been, the government had been holding on to half of it, and then the Islamic State took the other half. And now the militias are going to waltz right in there and take Ramadi back? It's a big town, man. Them and what army are going to do it? But they went and tried it anyway. Political decision, obviously, because, you know, I don't know. Is it because the Americans call them cowards for fleeing from Ramadi? And so they're losing. The attempt to retake Ramadi looks like yet another disaster in waiting. As I told you a couple weeks ago, how could it be otherwise? Just do the math on your hands. It's pretty simple. They can't hold on to the damn Baiji refinery. They've won it before and then lost it again twice now. Come on. That's just north of Baghdad. And then pro-Iran militias take upper hand after U.S.-backed forces crumble in Anbar. That is what had been reported by, I believe, Coburn and Prothero and others, and including on this show, the special forces of the Iraqi army that were at least worth something of a damn, the Golden Brigade and the others. They've all fallen apart now, too. There's nobody left but the Badr Corps now, which that's all the Iraqi army ever was the Badr Brigade anyway. Come on. That was the core of it anyway. Anyway, I don't know why the Shia are even doing any fighting at all right now. It seems like they'd just be holding their line and saying bye to the Sunnis. Good luck out there in the sunshine with no oil or money. Hey, Al Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow. And thanks, y'all. Hey, man, Phil Weiss is coming up, y'all. Here in just a little while. Did I just call Zarqawi Zawahiri? Bill in the email says, hey man, did you get your Z-named terrorist dudes wrong? I guess I might have. Nope, Zawahiri's still podcasting from somebody's basement in Pakistan somewhere. I reckon. But Zarqawi, no, he got exploded to death. Thank goodness. There is a guy who deserved to be exploded to death. If anybody ever deserved to be exploded to death, it just might have been him. But anyway, my point at the time was that we used to joke about this. I'm happy to admit how wrong I was because it just illustrates the absurdity of this situation. If you go look at my archive at antiwar.com, my name is in the right-hand margin down toward the bottom there. My last article is called Finding Ways to Stay in Iraq. And in there, I talk about how, look, man, no matter what happens, the idea that Al-Qaeda in Iraq, the smallest part of the Sunni insurgency, could ever take over all of Sunnistan is completely retarded and stupid, and it's only a thing that liars say when they're lying so that they can try to stay there. That's a rough paraphrase. But I guess if you had asked me, I would have said, yeah, sure, why the hell not? But I sure did not think. I did not have the foresight to say, yeah, to wait till the Democrats come. They're going to take the side of Al-Qaeda in Iraq and Syria for years on end until they really are powerful enough to declare a state and take all the weapons that we left behind. It's crazy. That's how insane it is. And it's not because Barack Obama is a secret Muslim. It's because he's a white conservative imperialist who thought, like Ronald Reagan before him, that, yeah, this is what we'll do. We'll just back these jihadi guys and they'll help get us our dirty work done. Because that's how business is done. And, yeah, it's just as insane as when Ronald Reagan did it. It's the very same thing. It's crazy, isn't it? It's crazy. Yeah. Here's an article I want to read, and it's the New York Times version. At least it's not Jeffrey Gettleman. Craig Whitlock and Adam Goldman. Oh, if it's the same Adam Goldman I'm thinking of, then that guy's a decent reporter, right? At least it's not Gettleman. That could be the name of a band. At least it's not Gettleman. New York Times, and it's an American coup plot that failed. How a reviled African ruler survived a coup hatched in the U.S. Oh, hatched in the U.S., but not by the CIA? Yeah, anyway, I hadn't read the damn thing yet. Just looked interesting. Thought I'd mention it. Oh, I meant to say this in the Islamic State news here. Russia scales back aid to Syria, apparently. That's at news.antiwar.com. Says they have withdrawn key personnel there. So I don't know exactly what that pretends. Think Putin is cutting the Syrians off? I don't know. And then also, I forgot this one too. Islamic State suicide attack kills 38 Iraqi policemen. Is this the one with the tank? Yeah, the tank. This one, the first headlines were, yeah, tank exploded somehow. They did a suicide bomb with it. It doesn't seem like a tank would blow up very well. Right? You would think they're held together pretty good. Wouldn't you want to drive just a truck or a minivan or something? I was thinking maybe, it was a green-on-blue thing, and the guy got in the tank, loaded a shell, blasted another tank. I knew they were lying. I just wasn't sure what the truth was. Hey, maybe they're still lying. I don't know. It's funny, though, man, in Iraq, after all these years, still, 38 cops got killed in a giant bombing, huh? I could see that, making the front page below the fold, maybe, in Iraq. Right, that's nothing. Anyway, yeah, I like looking back at how wrong I was about that. I have a clip of Dick Cheney saying, listen, there's a danger that if we leave, Al-Qaeda could take over. And I remember how completely absurd that was. But then Barack Obama and all of Dick Cheney's best friends took the side of the jihadists in Libya and in Syria. I'm sorry, man, but back to Rand Paul. He's in a great position to win this argument because all of the warmongers are wrong about everything, and they're completely inconsistent. I mean, all Rand has to do is just do a little bit of Socrates about, well, you support this war in this country on this side, right? And you support this war in this country on that side? And then what about the third and the fourth country? Whose side are you on anyway? Hell, I bet, once we get the NSA awesome speech-to-text search thing going on, you're going to be able to find great clips of me talking about news stories back in 2012 where Afghan jihadists were going and traveling to Syria where they could fight against Assad. And who wants to tangle with the U.S. Army when you can just tangle with Assad's army? They can't shoot straight worth a damn. Right? I mean, if you were the Taliban and you were getting hunted down like an animal by the U.S. Marine Corps as part of the surge, mightn't you travel to Syria where you can fight on America's side with American backing, with CIA training and money and guns? with Turkish and Saudi, Qatari paymasters sending you a check every Friday. Of course. Of course you would. Yep. Anyway, I always thought that was a funny kind of a irony there. Oh, and you know what? Here's an apology that I owe you guys. Yemen. I'm way behind on my Yemen news. And I just know very few people who are good on it. And also, I just have not done the work pouring through the news stories. Should at least get Jason Ditz on for you here. Report Yemen Houthi rebels, U.S. hold talks in Amman. Pro-Saudi Yemenis claim talks are indirect through Omani mediators. So I don't know if that really is a possible beginning to the end of the fighting going on there or not. But, you know, I saw this young lady tweet it out the other day. I love Twitter, man. What a great thing Twitter is. It really is. I mean, it's got its limitations or whatever, but Yemeni lady saying, whatever her name was, to Earth. The Saudis are still bombing Yemen for no reason. And that's right. I mean, for political reasons inside Saudi, but for no reason that anyone could discern that makes any sense in terms of tactics. They really think they're going to, even if they kill Saleh somehow with a lucky strike, they did bomb his house, they think they're going to bomb Hadi back into power there? Ever. They probably don't even think that. They're just bombing the place anyway.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Only problem with interviewing Phil Weiss is I just don't even hardly know where to begin. There's so much going on here. Welcome back to my show, Phil.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm doing real good. Appreciate you joining us again today.
Certainly.
So, well, I was going to say let's start with the New York Times, but no, let's start with this thing by Kate here. New Israeli bill aims to put Palestinian stone throwers in jail for 10 to 20 years. Now, this is this includes juveniles, and we're talking about people in the occupied territories throwing stones at soldiers?
Yeah, that's my understanding. I haven't, Kate just does a digest of the latest news, but... let's see. I think that it's up to 20 years, and for offenses that in the past have these kids have gotten 3 months for. You know, so. It's an Al Jazeera story. I'd have to look it up online right now as we're talking, and I would be, not serving your listeners.
Yeah, it's all right. Well, let's go back to the New York Times then. You got a chip on your shoulder about the New York Times. Chuck Hughes, why don't you just leave those poor little guys alone?
Yeah. The thing is, the Times is really emerging as the most important voice in favor of Israel in the United States. And it's playing a very important role in that sense. It's sort of like explaining to liberals why they should continue to love Israel. And when Israel is under attack everywhere, including, that Al Jazeera account of them putting stone throwers in jail for 20 years, or which we picked up, and by our site, by a movement on campus, by all over Europe, by the BDS movement, the boycott, Israel is being isolated and delegitimized. As Israeli leaders complained all weekend. They complained about this delegitimization. And the New York Times is providing the leading sort of counterforce to that delegitimization. They have it seems consciously, because there's just so many stories that are supportive of Israel inside the New York Times. So as a website that is devoted to trying to tell the truth about what Israel is and trying to end the special relationship between the United States and Israel, it's very important for me and my co-writers to focus on what the New York Times is doing and expose it and criticize it and question it and, you know, I think debunk it. I mean, for instance, the story we did today is just yesterday, the New York Times did an article saying, well, these Palestinians pose a demographic death sentence, a death warrant. Palestinian refugees pose a demographic death warrant to Israel if they were to return. And that is kind of shocking language. What they're talking about are Palestinians who want to return to their homes or their parents' homes that they were forced out of in 1948 in Israel. They just want their property back, and this is called a demographic death warrant. You can imagine, just imagine in the United States saying that Jews are moving into this suburb and they pose a demographic death warrant to the Christian white character of the suburb, or black people are doing that, or Muslim people are doing that. Anybody who made that kind of comment in the mainstream, or even off the little off the mainstream in America, they'd lose their job. Yeah. But the New York Times is doing that in a favorable way about Israeli efforts.
Yeah, it sounds like 1953 or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's always the problem in this discussion, is that Israel and support for Israel restore Americans to this halcyon period in American history when it was fine to say the most racist things against black people, or anti-Semitic things, or anti-ethnic things. And wait, you know, we spent two generations ending that type of conversation, that bigotry in American life. Hey, it's going on in Israel right now, and you're allowed to say it in that context in the United States.
Yeah, the Jewish state as the exemplar for white supremacists. Hey, that's what that guy Breivik was about too, right? Oh yeah, we love Israel. They show how you get it done.
That's
you just
right.
Put a bayonet at somebody's back and you march them right out of where you don't want them no more.
That's right. He admired Israel, didn't he?
Yeah, Pamela Geller and all them. It's the same shtick. They pal around with Zionists to demonize Muslims all the time, here and in Europe.
Yeah.
Of course. And and for Israel, just to, you know, try to confuse the issue by conflating all Muslims with all groups of fighting Muslims, wherever they are and whatever side they're on. It's all just one big
right.
scary Muslim thing that must be confronted in this massive clash.
Right. And you know, you look at American history, and that's a familiar process. Almost everybody who came to this country, you know, after the Native Americans has been demonized in, you know, one fashion or another for being different. And we're supposed to get over that kind of thing.
All right. Now, one of the most important ways effective ways to lie is by omission. And that's one of these headlines that you have here. It's James North. Did I even say it's MondoWeiss.net, where Phil Weiss and 100 other great writers, a dozen other really great writers write a lot of great stuff. Half dozen? I don't know. Israeli propaganda dominates front page of New York Times today, he writes, and it's all about how, boy, are the Israelis clever at desalinating seawater and at just being able to pipe in water from the West Bank, where they half own it with the Palestinians. And then that's it. They don't even explain that they are trespassing on somebody else's aquifer and diverting water away from the people who own it. Simple property rights violation.
And a shocking story, just a shocking story that really speaks to what I was saying about the New York Times' importance in terms of promoting a kind of a happy vision of what Israel is, and a very a hopeful and positive vision. So the top front page of the New York Times on Saturday, four columns, was this photograph of a swimming pool next to the desert, and then this article was all about Israel has solved its drought problems by desalinating the sea. And the whole article was essentially Israel has made the desert bloom. Now, that, those are words that we've been hearing for, you know, nearly 70 years, and from the likes of Ben-Gurion, et cetera, and going back to the founding of Israel. We're going to make the desert bloom. We're going to, you know, the early Zionists actually believed that the Palestinians would welcome them because they would bring such a modern standard of living, and they would, you know, make the place, you know, cover it with flowers and agricultural produce. Well, guess what? The Palestinians didn't want massive Zionist immigration for reasons anyone can well understand. But these arguments persist. And amazingly, the New York Times runs this piece about how Israel has solved its water woes and only in passing says that, by the way, they're taking this aquifer from the West Bank where the Palestinians live under illegal occupation, just as you said. So,
yeah. Oh, and the Palestinians, they complain that, oh, well, we don't get enough of the water and it costs too much. Like, really? Yeah. Won't they ever shut up?
Really? And this stuff is not... you know, this is not in the margins. This is prominently a grievance of the Palestinians that they have an aquifer in the West Bank, 80% of which is taken by the Israelis. So you have settlers with swimming pools, illegal settlers, colonists, living next door to Palestinians who only get water a certain amount of time per day or sometimes have their water pipes slashed and taken away from them as they're being ethnically cleansed to make way for more settlers. It's just hideous. And the fact that the New York Times lends itself to this process and even runs a photograph of Palestinians in at one of their springs in the West Bank without saying that that spring has been illegally exploited by the Israeli government, it's just shocking. Instead of, I mean, there's a way to cover this story. I think it is remarkable. It strikes me from reading that piece as remarkable what Israel is doing to desalinate water. And in fact, the Israeli government promptly tweeted this miracle of what we're doing with water. I find that kind of interesting, but you can't run that article in the United States. You just cannot run it without explaining what they are, the other ways that they are getting, they are solving their water issue, and that's stealing the indigenous people's water as they are being ethnically cleansed and illegally occupied.
All right, hold it right there. We'll be right back, everybody.
Sorry to go on like that.
Yeah, no, I asked you to. That's why I brought you on. Hold it right there. We'll be right back in just a sec. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Phil Weiss from MondoWeiss.net. And, well, we're talking about the occupations and how it goes and how the American media, and particularly the New York Times, covers it. And, you know, as we've discussed 100 times on this show, and I just always go back to this because I think it's so important when we talk about this subject, how, you know, I accuse the New York Times and all the rest of them, and partially because of the New York Times, which is the heart of the agenda-setting media when it comes to that, they never explain the backstory. They don't ever, ever, ever say, and you could absolutely do this in a New York Times story. It's one column inch. In 1967, there was a war and the Israelis occupied the West Bank and they didn't ethnically cleanse them. The Palestinians are still all there, but they've been under a foreign country's occupation and martial law for 50 years now and they really hate it or whatever. You could put a little something like that, but they don't ever say that. They pretend, again, by omission. They act as though the West Bank is Israel. It's just another neighborhood in Israel or something. And it always has been and something. And if there are Palestinians there, well, I'm not sure why, but they better just get the hell out of the way of the progress. Don't you know we got some water pipes we're putting in here or whatever it is. And And so I think, you know, most Americans basically come at this from a completely kind of upside down angle where they don't, if they hear much about a threat from the Palestinians at that point, they imagine a kind of a foreign country of Palestinian Arabs next door that's
right.
Kind of always threatening Israel on their borders. But they get it confused where the border is as far as the West Bank and all that. And they never in the New York Times or on the whoever replaced Dan Rather or whatever, they don't never say, hey, look at a map, everybody. Let me give you a little 101 on this. They could do
right.
it in a lot less time than I just did, that's for sure, you know?
Right. And, I mean, part of that is just the degree to which the root causes of this conflict, which are burning, you know, for Palestinians and Israelis, the root causes are just not really talked about over here. How can you talk about refugees destroying Israel, as the Times says today, without saying, guess what? The reason they want to return peacefully is because they had their houses taken away from them. It's their property that was taken from them to create Israel. And they became refugees, and they were denied their right to return. Or why? How can you talk about Palestinian violent resistance without talking about occupation and, you know, a sort of universal understanding that people are allowed to resist their occupiers by a lot of different means under international law? So I'm not I think our whole image of Palestinian terrorism and Palestinian resistance and jihad generally is influenced by this conflict and the misunderstanding that we have of this conflict. And we've got to correct that balance ultimately.
All right. Now, you wrote this great thing about Max Blumenthal. In the New York Times again, and how they just, I guess they refused to review his last 400 and something page book about Israel, Goliath, correct?
Right.
They just
right.
didn't even acknowledge its existence at all?
Right. They did not. I mean,
and now he's got a new one.
He's got a new book coming out about Gaza, the Gaza onslaught of last summer that killed over 2,100 Palestinians. And his last book, Goliath, really documented the degree to which right-wing Israeli right-wing political culture is dominant in Israel. The left is really at the margins. Even liberals are at the margins, and there are even fascistic trends inside that government. Now, these were truths that I personally denied for a long time, and that our media is denying, and Max Blumenthal documented them in his book. And, you know, even if you look at his account and say, well, he collected the worst parts of it, you know, gosh, that's what journalists do. They look and they compile, you know, all the worst things and say this is what is characterizing the society. And no one can refute his analysis. And yet the New York Times denies it. It does not want to believe that this is happening in Israel. The chief of Jerusalem correspondent of the New York Times, Jody Rudorn, has said only a small strain of Israeli society wants the West Bank to itself. That's a lie. It's not a small strain. And in fact, it's almost all the ministers of the new government want the West Bank. So how can you – that again, I get back to the New York Times' importance in representing this reality. And then to tie it into that question I flubbed at the start of our conversation, Al Jazeera has a piece about those rock throwers that you brought up. And I looked at it during the break. It's – this is new Israeli government wants to impose 10 to 20 years on these Palestinian kids who are under occupation who are throwing stones. 10 to 20-year sentences.
And we're talking about minors.
We're talking about minors in many cases who get, you know, who are getting 3 months, and it's an outrage. This is another way in which this Israeli society is really shutting down and displaying some of the very worst aspects of kind of tyrannical governmental behavior that we've seen in the last 100 years.
You know, Max told me on the show years ago, I guess he was writing Goliath at the time, that, oh man, I'm sorry, it's just, it's too far gone. How far to the right is Israel? It's so far to the right, the political culture there, that they can only keep making matters worse in a way that reinforces the right.
That's a great
If we're
going
to have no peace at all, then we better have a totalitarian police state to keep them all down, which, you know, is just, and then they just keep moving further and further, and basically there's no coming back from here. This is the slippery slope from hell, and the liberals can cry about it all they want, but they just don't, Israeli ears just don't even hear them.
It's yeah, it just
over.
Gets
and that was
and
years
worse.
Ago. He was saying, just forget about it.
Right, right. It gets worse and worse. And then people are shocked when, you know, you had the media, including myself, predicting that sort of center left or the center was going to win in this latest Israeli election. Livni and Herzog, they lost overwhelmingly. And you have the most reactionary Israeli government ever in force. When are... And those words, most reactionary, are from Americans for Peace Now, a liberal Zionist group. When are American – and then J Street, another liberal Zionist group, said Netanyahu must move immediately on forming his government to affirm his support for a two-state solution. No. Since he's been in he's formed his government almost overwhelmingly, everyone in his government has said we're against a two-state solution. So what are the liberal Zionists going to do about this? Are they going to continue to deny this reality, or are they actually going to try to punish Israel for this behavior in such a manner that it might actually change its behavior?
Well, yeah, good question. And now – who's the new lady who Netanyahu had to compromise with one of his ministers and appoint this lady to be the head of the justice something or other over
justice
there?
Justice minister, Ayelet Sheked.
Now, what does that mean? Does that mean attorney general, or what does that mean?
I believe it's the equivalent of their attorney general, yes.
Oh, for crying out loud, really? All right, well, so tell us about her, because I read some things that I almost didn't believe it.
Yeah, Shaked. She is the proponent of this law that would put Palestinian kids in prison for 10 to 20 years for throwing a rock. She's the one who said that God gave us the land, all the land is ours, meaning the entire West Bank. She's the one who last summer, when the violence began between Israel and Gaza. She's the one who posted on her website a statement from another right-wing Zionist saying that it's not just the militants, it's the entire society that we're against, and so we must destroy that entire society. Essentially, a call for genocide that she endorsed on her Facebook page. So you have this person who's young, attractive, and just a lunatic, and she's the new justice minister through a deal that was Netanyahu made with Naftali Bennett, and it doesn't get a lot of attention in the United States.
That's amazing. You know, you can talk like that on the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post or in the National Review, but you can't be the Attorney General of the United States of America. You can't be John Ashcroft or Mukasey and talk about Arabs like that.
Right.
No
right.
way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I say that, and this is something that some of my left-wing friends just do not accept, but I think is true, is that this special relationship has really damaged American political culture. We were better than this before we formed this relationship. And it's because of Israel's awful relationship with Palestinians and Arabs that that has contaminated the United States' understanding of how the relationship with Arabs.
You know, that's absolutely true. And we already had an evil empire before, you know, the neocons gained such influence.
Yeah, right.
But on the other hand, if we could redo the 21st century without Crystal, I was thinking of this earlier. What if Irving Kristol and Norman Podhoretz and Leo Strauss and Albert Wohlstetter had all died fighting for the Red Army, you know, for Leon Trotsky?
Yeah.
And we just never had this neoconservative movement in America.
Right.
How different might the 21st century have been? It doesn't mean that the U.S. would have been the best friend of the people of all the Arab lands by any stretch, but would we have killed more than a million of them and, you know, radicalized and bankrupted and turned an entire society upside down and you know, turned an entire generation of millions and millions of people against us? I don't think probably, you know?
No. And but this is a really important question going forward when we look at the who is for war with Iran? Only one group, the Israel lobby and the neoconservatives. So it's not the 21st, it's the 21st century, it's the future I'm worried about, their continuing influence over our politics and our establishment and government.
Yeah. Well, it's very important work that you do, shining
thanks
a light
a lot,
on this.
Scott.
And
thanks a lot.
Well, listen, I say that because I know a lot of other people think so, too. So that's the measure.
Great.
And
great.
You guys are having great success over there. And
thank
I'm
you
sure
very much.
Keep it up.
Yeah. The feeling's mutual.
All right, y'all. That's the great
okay.
Philip Weiss. Oops, sorry. That's the great Philip Weiss. He's at MondoWeiss.net, and he's got a whole bunch of great writers over there, too. Go check him out, MondoWeiss.net.